You're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another Fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/CC and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2015. This is day three of the afternoon commute with me, Fakeologist, and John Adams. This is the third installment, just trying an experimental conference call software to accommodate all the, test it out, mainly because I want to see if I can attract more people into talking about what I like to talk about. And I know pretty much everyone has a phone. So if you're interested in participating, go to fakeologist.com/CC, as in conference call, and call in, join in. You can start your own conference call and record it. The only difference between this and audio chat is it's not live, and you won't be able to listen to it till I finish editing it. So even if you do start the call yourself, I don't know if you'll be able to play it back right away. There is actually a playback number, but I haven't really experimented with that. But those are the details. If you want to arrange a conference call, just go to chat.fakeologist.com and make an arrangement. And if you have a computer and you can install TeamSpeak, then go to audio chat because that will go live right away and is more automatic. But this is just another method of communicating, talking about the things I like to talk about. And one person I do like talking about who's made himself available at the same time every day, which is really handy, is John, who does the afternoon commute normally on Mondays with Chris Kendall of HoaxBustersCall.com. And Chris Kendall has been called the most influential person on the Internet by at least one other person who has disappeared from the Internet the last few weeks anyway. But John could easily be called just as influential since he's an integral part of the afternoon commute. Well, he invented it, I would suppose, and he gets all kinds of great guests. And I thought maybe we're a little short on time today, short notice, but I was thinking maybe, John, if you're interested, we could maybe dial in John Rappaport, whose blog I do read occasionally and talks about a lot of this stuff that we're dabbling in lately. So welcome. Happy Wednesday.
Good to be there, or here, actually.
Wherever you are, you're here.
Wherever I am, I'm right here. So, what were you saying about John Rappaport?
Well, I read his blog sometimes. I just read, it's not on my must-read list every day, but I do go over there when I remember to go over there. And he writes about a lot of stuff we talk about, or you talk about, or others talk about, Chris talks about. I thought it'd be interesting, maybe we could do a round table with him on this Fakeologist commute with John Adams, or this John Adams commute with Fakeologist, and maybe talk about some of his stuff, because he's writing almost every day about the Matrix. He calls it the Matrix. He watches, it seems, the same stuff we do, the Truman Show, the Network movie, and I'm not sure his opinion on 9/11, but he talks just about everything else that I think we like to dabble in. So he might be an interesting person to start off talking about if you're interested.
Yeah, he definitely is an interesting person on another level. I think he has something to do with the writer John Marks. That's M-A-R-K-S, not M-A-R-X.
Okay.
But John Marks was famous for writing a book that is one of the king of all rabbit trails. And I think John Rappaport had something to do with him, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time since I've even looked looked at anything John Rapoport wrote. But yeah, Marx wrote a book called The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, and it was all about how there were mind-controlled MK-Ultra assassins, and they were all being controlled by the book Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
Basically, the movie Conspiracy Theory is you know, loosely based off of the information in the John Marx book. And John Marx, turns out he was actually a controlled opposition type because he worked for the government in some capacity. I can't remember. But Jan Ervin actually did a little expose on him. And a lot of those same style of books that came out in around the same time period, there was another one that I actually own a copy of that is a very rare book, and I think it actually goes for quite a bit of money on eBay and Amazon. It's called Operation Mind Control. It's by a guy, I think it's William Bowert, who wrote that book.
Okay.
But, yeah, these are all, like, little rabbit trail books that kind of take you into this area of that there's these mind control assassins, which I fully used to believe that was real, so.
Yeah, I've got. What do you think? What do you think of it now? Is it just science fiction, fantasy?
I don't even think it's that. I think it's actually a contrived idea put out there for you to latch onto. And it's basically, I can't remember who we were talking about this with. Maybe it was Dave McGowan it was Joseph Atwill when we had Joseph Atwill on. And, I even brought it up to him, and he agreed with me. I said, well, why do you need an MK Ultra assassin when you could just pay somebody to do it? Like, let's say people actually really did die, you know, right? Allegedly, at some of these things. I'm not saying that they did, but most people believe that, right?
Okay.
So why would you need an MK-Ultra assassin when you could just hire somebody to do it?
Yeah.
You know, so, and then a lot of these things, when you get into the conspiracy theory world, they start talking about MK-Ultra assassins and everything else, and it's like, take the Bobby Kennedy shooting, where Bobby Kennedy allegedly died. You know, Sirhan, it comes out, you know, even in the conspiracy theory, he's not even the one who shoots him. So what was his point of even being there, except for that he's alleged to be an MK Ultra assassin shooter? You know? But then in the conspiracy theory, he's not even the shooter at all. It's the bodyguard that's the shooter. And so it's like, okay, so you have this guy there who's allegedly under mind control to do the shooting, yet he doesn't even do the shooting. And then all of the other people who are in these things allegedly under mind control, they're never the ones who actually do the shooting. So even in the conspiracy theory, these people don't operate as the shooters. So I know I got off on a rabbit trail there, digressed a little bit off of you originally wanting to talk about what was on John Rapoport's website. I apologize.
Well, it's okay. We're not really too focused in any way, and if you have something to say, then I don't mind you going down the trail. It was just an idea I had because I did contact him in the past, but he has limited Monday to Friday time, and I could never make a schedule match. But I thought, well, if I'm doing this brief call at a scheduled time on the weekdays, that may or may not be interrupted. And because it's not live, it's okay. I can chop it up later.
Yeah.
Then I thought maybe he'd be a good candidate because he's on California time, I believe, and I think he could probably fit in an hour, and you'd be a good person to have on the call probably because
sure.
You have a lot of parallel interests, I think, just looking at his site.
What articles does he have up there right now that we could discuss?
Well, he just did, he's got something every day. I'm just looking now quickly. He's got something on the movie Network,
okay,
which he said is the last great media revelation movie. I haven't read that article, actually.
Have you ever seen the movie Network?
I tried to watch it. It's not easy to watch. I didn't find it that interesting. I know what the whole theme of it is, but I wasn't able to hold my interest. I might try again, but I have it on my hard drive, so if I not on the top of my list, but have you seen it?
Yeah, a couple of times, and what I found was more interesting about the movie Network was I was reading a book, and I tend to start off sentences with those particular words quite often.
I hear that.
But yeah, I was reading a book called Making Movies. It was a book by Sidney Lumet, who was the director of Network. And he dropped a little tidbit of information in there that I was not aware of. And he said he was talking with Paddy Chayefsky, and Paddy Chayefsky is the guy who wrote Network. And so he says, I was having a conversation with Paddy Chayefsky when we were trying to decide who was going to play the character that Faye Dunaway plays in the movie. I can't remember what the name of the character is. And he prefaced it by saying that Paddy Chayefsky is, like, basically a Zionist Marxist, right?
Okay.
So this is the guy who wrote Network is a Zionist Marxist type. And
okay.
So he said, Sidney Lumet had suggested that they get Vanessa Redgrave to play the character that Faye Dunaway ended up playing. And Chayefsky said, oh, no, we can't get her because she supports Palestine. And Sidney Lumet replied, well, you know, we can't not hire her because of her political views. That would be bigotry. And he said, and Chayefsky's reply was, it's not bigotry if it's a Jew doing it to a Gentile.
Oh, brother.
That's where another, he's coming from.
More divide and conquer nonsense.
Yeah, so I look at Network in a totally different light, whereas I think it is a revelation of the method type movie, because there is a lot of interesting things in that movie. Name an interesting thing. Let's see. It's they show you that the news is just as much entertainment as it is, allegedly real.
Okay.
And there's a scene in there where, you know, the Howard Beale character, he becomes a parody of himself by the time the movie is over, because what it looks like to me is what they did was okay, this guy's crazy and he's actually telling the truth on the news, so we've got to control that by making it, you know, by providing an outlet for that to come out on, right? And so you get to the end of the movie, and it's like, wait a minute, he's talking about how bad the media is, yet he's on this big spectacle show, which is part of the controlled media. So it's kind of a revelation of the method that even the outlets that you could think you can trust, like Patriot Radio or something like that, are part of the spectacle as well. And the most interesting part of the movie is when he gets to meet Arthur Jensen, which is played by Ned Beatty. It's a very famous part. Where Ned Beatty is giving him this, like, super occultic speech about the way power actually works. And he talks about how there is no Russia, there is no America, there is no China. There's only rubles and shekels and dollars and yen. And he said, you know, and he talks about, do you think that the Soviets sit around and talk? He's all, what do you think they talk about at their meeting? Do you think they talk about Marxist philosophy? He's all, no, they're talking about, you know, how much the ruble is against the petrodollar and all that. Like, he goes over this whole thing, and he kind of shatters the illusion that they're, that governments run off of any sort of ideology at all.
Interesting.
So, that is one interesting, or two interesting parts about the movie Network.
Now, do you think, if people view that in the context of a movie, which Network is, does that make them suspend disbelief and think that he's not really revealing anything because it's just a movie? And if you think those ideas, then you should consider them fiction, similar to Capricorn 1, which was a movie essentially saying that NASA faked the moon landings, or in this case, the Mars landing. And therefore, if you believe the story in the movie, then you're believing fiction. But even though it's telling you probably what went down, for the most part, because it's a movie, you're going to associate it with fiction and therefore disregard it, and then associate any future discussion about how one might fake the moon landing with fiction and therefore ignore it. Do you think that's how it works?
It's an interesting question, because when we ended the call yesterday, we actually kind of got into something that I've pondered many times, and that is, does anybody ever actually have a discussion about something being fake? Right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, you could look at it from both ways and try to figure out what is, you know, what is the purpose of all of it. It's interesting in the occult, which I do think, like, you know, people at the top, especially top bankers, they're really into, you know, Kabbalistic occultism, from what I've looked into. And so part of that, and part of, you know, alchemical Freemasonry, and I don't want to get too far off into the esoteric occult stuff, but part of that is speaking reality into existence. Okay, And we do this on a regular basis, at a very low level. So, like, let's say you think to yourself, and I'll give an example of something that happened to me where I actually was cognitively aware of this happening. I remember thinking to myself one day, you know, I haven't heard this Pink Floyd song in years, right?
Well, which one?
I'm gonna go. It was Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
Great one, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
20 minutes? Is that 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think it's about that. It's a pretty long song, but a very... great song, yeah. Really good, thought-provoking, I would say that. That's what that song is.
You hadn't heard the song. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hadn't heard the song in years. This was years and years ago. I hadn't heard that song in years. And you know, I'm gonna try to find a copy of that song so I could listen to that. And so, I went about ways of getting a hold of that song, and I made it happen. And so we do that every day. You see, we have a thought about something, and then we think it into existence, right?
Well, you mean you went and found the song? Well, in the old days, you probably have to either go buy a record or find an old copy of a record or a tape or recording off the radio.
Yeah, I went and I purchased a CD at a back when they actually sold CDs at places. This was back when. In America, they used to have a record store called Tower Records.
Yeah.
And so So yeah, that's what I did. I said, you know, I haven't heard that song in many years. I'm actually going to go buy a copy of Wish You Were Here, which that song's on the album Wish You Were Here. And yeah. So yeah, that's what
yeah,
I did.
If anyone's under 20, sorry to interrupt. If anyone's under 20 listening to this broadcast, there used to be a thing called record stores, which was pressed plastic that made a diamond needle vibrate based on the scratches on the plastic, and it went across into speakers, which, of course, we still have today. And you had to browse through the record store, and it was divided up like a library alphabetically often, different categories of music. Yeah, this is something that the whole generation has no idea what we're talking about all of a sudden. Isn't it fascinating as you get older what changes?
Yeah, it's also interesting, too, how literally overnight that entire industry of actually going and purchasing CDs and, you know, purchasing music at a store literally disappeared in the year 2007. It's just completely and totally gone. Over Christmas time, I had gone into a Barnes & Noble because someone gave me a Barnes & Noble gift certificate. And there's literally about 10 CDs in there now, whereas literally half the store used to be devoted to music.
Yeah, but we digress. So you made it happen is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what we all do. We all make it. We all think things into existence. The elite people who plan culture and plan our futures. That's what they do. They have to manifest things into existence that are written down on paper or written down in a plan. And yeah. you speak it into existence. So if you say you put out a meme or an idea like the Mythos one we had talked about yesterday with, we won't even bring it up or digress off into it, transgenderism into society, you get the news to speak it into existence for you.
Oh, yeah.
And then people start parroting it. They start talking about it. Parrot, talk, speak.
Yeah.
And those speaking manifests thoughts. Now your thoughts are occupied by all of this ridiculous nonsense.
Yeah, sure.
Your thoughts are not occupied by other things that may be important. Maybe even something that might be important just in your daily life. Like, man, I totally forgot about the fact that I was supposed to pay the water bill today, and now they're going to shut the water off because I was too busy looking up something about some guy getting a sex change.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So there's all sorts of things, along those lines where we all manifest this stuff into existence, but there's definitely somebody who comes up with these ideas and makes it happen. And like I said, you brought it up yesterday. It is an interesting thought to think that, somewhere – there's a room somewhere with people talking in it about how they're actually going to, fake a moon landing or, put out fake news stories and that sort of thing. So,
well, I think there has all ideas come from a kernel, and the kernel has to start somewhere. So there has to be some kind of collective that is working on this all the time and trying to throw as much against a thought wall as possible to see what sticks and what resonates. And you can't always tell, I don't think, exactly what's going to work. Just like I don't think you can really predict a movie that's going to catch on. You can spend a ton of money, and I believe that it's true that you can't tell for sure what movie is going to catch on in a big, big way. Even if you follow formulas because of different other factors that interfere with the creation of a blockbuster. The same with, I think, cultural waves. Maybe
maybe they have a huge list that they decide to promote to keep people distracted. And again, they put so much out there, it doesn't really matter if they don't all stick with the public or resonate or continue to percolate, because they have another one ready to go, another fairly nonsensical story ready to go.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that there is real competition amongst elites.
Yeah.
But it's in a controlled paradigm. So it's like, let's say Tim runs the world, okay?
Okay.
And you've got 20 front companies in a particular industry. Let's just say you've got 20 front companies and they're all vying for the position of, you know, the biggest search engine, like Google or whatever, right?
Sure.
Okay, so you've got 20 front companies with 20 front CEOs, 20 presidents, 20 vice presidents, you know, all from all different companies. These people all compete against each other, and in the end, you want a monopoly. That's what your goal is. Your goal is, okay, I want everything monopolized under one roof, and I want people to be acclimated to the idea of things coming into one, because I believe in this alchemical process, this Freemasonic process of everything becoming one, okay? And so you set up all of these things, and the people themselves involved in the company, involved in it at certain levels, they're in real competition with each other, but it doesn't matter who wins the competition because you own it all. So you don't care who actually is going to be the winner. And it's the same thing with, like, you're talking about a movie. It doesn't really matter which movie becomes a blockbuster or not, because they own all the movies.
Yeah, they're their own competition, which is similar to the controlled opposition concept, where you own both sides. It doesn't really matter how the battle ends up. You win in the end. Like Vegas.
Yeah.
The house always wins.
That's right. Well, I've never gambled.
Yeah, me neither. I find that it's a sin for a reason. Whether you're religious or not, it's a sin for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I don't want to get off topic, even though we don't really have one today. With regards to lotteries, if people lose the lottery, it's hard to feel bad for them, and it's hard for them to feel bad for themselves because they know it's wrong in the first place to have even engaged in such a ludicrous investment. And I think that's why, perhaps, my theory that the lotteries are pretty strictly controlled by usually one corporation that somehow gets a license to control the lotteries, at least the big one, and they use it to manipulate people in the sense that I think statistically the numbers don't come up, and therefore they manufacture winners, and it ends up being a pretty good shakedown and form of revenue for government.
Yeah, you know, I had a friend whose mom won the lottery.
Okay.
And she blew all the money. Not kidding.
Well, you hear that story a lot. And whether it's true or not, I'm sure it is true in a lot of cases. I'm not saying every lottery at every level is they have manufactured winners, but I think some lotteries and some mega winners are fake. I think it has more to do with the statistical improbability that numbers coming up at all. But if they didn't keep it statistically improbable that the numbers came up, then they wouldn't have a way to raise money, because they'd be giving it away all the time. Not like throw your money in the hat and someone has to win. It's throw your money in the hat and someone almost never wins.
Yeah, I think another thing is that they count on. I mean, I have to say, for the most part, people who buy lottery tickets are poor. They're poor.
Desperate.
People buying them at a liquor store, buying them at a gas station. It's a last ditch effort type of thing. And so,
yeah.
So when they when they get the money, they've never had money before, and they spend it all as fast as they got it.
Well, it takes a technique to make money, and it takes maybe a greater technique to keep the money once you've got it. And
yeah.
Actually, a friend of mine is in wealth management, and he was telling me that most of his richest clients, all they want to do is maintain and not lose their big piles of money. And they are very, very, very conservative. They only want inflation plus 1 or 2%. They're not into high-risk rolling, and they're just really concerned about maintaining capital.
Yep.
Hyper-conservative, usually. Because once you have it, you're more worried about losing it.
Yep, that's exactly true. Yeah, and a lot of people, too. I went to high school with out where I used to live in Orange County. There's a particular area where a lot of wealthy people live. It's called Villa Park, and it was a neighborhood where a lot of the Angels baseball players used to live because it was, you know, not too far away from Anaheim Stadium.
Yeah,
and like Axl Rose had a house there and stuff like that. And so I grew up with a lot of people who were much, much, much more well off than I'll ever be. And I found a lot of people who are on the lower rungs, because I would consider all of those people to be on the much lower rungs of the wealth ladder.
Yeah.
You know, probably millionaires back in the 80s and 90s. But even on the lower rungs like that, like someone who would have been, you know, a millionaire or maybe a multimillionaire, they can sometimes be very flashy and buy big houses and that type of thing. But I remember there was this one girl who was, rumored about, you know, everybody talked about how rich she was. You know, oh, her family's so rich. Oh, they're so wealthy. Oh, they're so this. And she was very conservative. She didn't, you know, wear flashy clothes like a lot of the other people who were much less wealthier than her, and a very reserved person. And you never heard her talk about a lot of the stuff that you would hear other people talk about, who I guess you would kind of call nouveau riche. You know.
Yeah. Well, that brings up something that is not really fakeology related, and I don't always look into media fakery. It's not a complete obsession. I've always enjoyed documentaries, especially independent films, and they are, I think, experiencing a slight renaissance, increased interest because of Netflix. Netflix is becoming pervasive, and everyone seems to have it. And a lot of people are discovering the documentary section. Anyway, there was a documentary. No, this has nothing to do with Netflix, I don't think. From 2012, and it was called Queen of Versailles. And again, this has nothing to do with psychology, but it has to do with nouveau riche. It's a story about Siegel family, and apparently Rick Siegel, I think his name is the largest private owner of timeshare resorts in America, and he has his third flashy wife, trophy wife, is the Queen of Versailles, and it's called the Queen of Versailles because they're building the largest house in America. And I'm bringing this up because you said nouveau riche, and they're first generation rich, those two, and they still exist. And they were in the news this week, June 10th, 2015 week, because allegedly their firstborn of seven children died in an apparent drug overdose.
Now, coincidentally, the two were featured in a television show called Wife Swap that aired in the last week. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. All these things are very coincidental. Anyway, I highly recommend the documentary because it shows what is best about America. Allegedly, anyone can go from rags to riches. And what is the worst about America, where there's just gross, disgusting consumerism, alleged, not gross, mistreatment of immigrant workers that staff their big house, but it kept my interest the same way driving by a car wreck keeps one's interest. I didn't want to watch it, but I couldn't stop watching it. And it really,
you're talking about that lady Jackie Siegel, right?
That's absolutely right. And if anyone wants to watch the movie, it is on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and look for Queen of Versailles. It's quite interesting. And it ties in a little bit with what John and I were talking about, what you and I are talking about. Highly recommended.
Yeah.
And when it came out in 2012, they were going downhill still. They were still recovering from the great engineering-like banking crash in 2008. So they were in the process of losing their biggest jewel in the resort crown, which was called PH Westgate Tower in Las Vegas, a big resort, timeshare, casino. I think PH stood for Planet Hollywood. I don't know how they were linked to Planet Hollywood. But then they were going to lose their biggest house in America because the bank wanted it sold. And that is why it's called Queen of Versailles, because they constructed the house after a building or a castle in Versailles, France, that they saw. I don't know if you saw the picture.
It's a palace.
Palace. So, yeah, they took the top three floors of this palace, which I think actually is recreated in Las Vegas. Maybe that's where they saw it, actually. And they wanted to recreate it as a house on an island somewhere near Orlando, Florida. But not really fakeologist-related, but a very interesting documentary, and you should also go watch Wife Swap as these two people. Because apparently they're back on track and still into super gross spending. And it's gross to watch.
Oh, Timmy dropped out.
Yeah, no, I stopped talking.
Oh, okay. No, I actually didn't hear what you said because it actually did fade out a little bit at the end there.
Oh, okay. Well, at the end I said that they're back on track. If you watch Celebrity Wife Swap, which is another car wreck type program, and apparently the Seagulls are back on track. They're still building their biggest house in America, somewhere near Orlando, Florida, and I recommend watching that too. And
yeah,
their new movie.
That new house they're building is a monstrosity, or as they would call them back in the days.
Well, interestingly, it's 90,000 square feet.
90,000 square feet, yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
Bizarre stuff.
If you believe in the numerology aspect of these annoying people that do things and make media events out of them. But that is a movie documentary that the listenership, if they're interested in seeing what I'm looking at, I'm going to probably put a review of it on morab.com if I get a chance, because I think it's worth watching. I also put a lot of other documentaries I watch on morab.com that are, if you like documentaries, I recommend. Do you watch documentaries at all?
I haven't watched anything in a long time, but yeah, I used to watch documentaries all the time. But like I said, I haven't watched television or movies or documentaries in over a year.
Okay, well, probably good for you, but I still like to know what's going on in the culture, because otherwise you have no way of relating to other people that are out of the Matrix research.
Yes, that's true.
Because there aren't too many people that you can talk about what we talk about without them withdrawing really quickly, because it's just like speaking a different language.
Yeah, there's also, I mean, there's a lot of documentaries that I saw over the past year that I wanted to watch, but clearing my mind for a while, and I'm sure I'll go back and watch some documentaries at some point.
Well, you sent me an email today. Do you remember what it was about?
Yeah, I've actually wanted to start this with Chris called Fear-Mongering Flashback.
Yes, and I did click the link. It's titled Al-Qaeda Nukes Already in the United States, and this is from July 2005.
2005, Fear-Mongering Flashback. I remember hearing this on Alex Jones, that Al-Qaeda had nukes, and they were smuggling them. Yeah, it's so funny to say it out loud. They were smuggling them across the Mexican border and actually using the gang MS-13 to smuggle the nukes across the border. So, and so, of course, the alternative media spin on that was back then was that the government was, you know, allowing this to happen, because they were going to set off a nuke and blame it on patriots. And, yeah, so, of course, that never happened, and, of course, Al-Qaeda obviously didn't have nukes because there aren't any nukes.
Very unlikely that they exist at all. It's far more likely that they're a fictional weapon that scares the pants out of people, off people, and will continue to scare the pants off people.
Yeah.
All by a few really poorly created, but probably pretty good at the time, film footage showing what's most likely tons and tons of TNT blowing up in a way that's probably enhanced by Hollywood. And no one's ever seen it probably in real life anywhere, because it's probably quite a chore to assemble tons and tons of TNT undercover or quietly if you're not the military.
Or what they had was like a really super, super huge stick of dynamite with a big wick. Right? Like in a cartoon or something.
Yeah. Very ridiculous.
Or they had like one of those bombs, you know, with like the cartoon bomb, like the one that the Israeli Prime Minister held up at the United Nations.
Yeah, I always thought that was a joke. I thought someone penciled that in or photoshopped it, but that was actually what he had.
Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. He's got this bomb that Wile E. Coyote would have, you know?
Yeah. I really thought that was a Photoshop job that some humorist created.
Yeah.
So we're into cartoon level fear mongering. That's how silly it is. And it almost seems, again, that they're testing the gullibility of the public to buy into this. Can they use cartoon level characterizations of fear and make it stick and not get questioned? And apparently no one's either paying attention or everyone's convinced.
Yeah, there's another level to that too, because here's a good explanation of it. It's like, or maybe it's not a good explanation, maybe just me working it out in my brain, but you know, there was this old idea that, you know, television, you know, like watching Westerns on television made people violent, right? They had these studies that they did back in the 50s, and they correlated the rise in crime to the fact that they started showing Western movies on TV. And there were all these guns and everything, which they've had Westerns in film for, you know, since the start of the film industry. So, and then they did the same type of studies with television, just in general, or like, you know, say educational television, like Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And so what they found was, you know, you could have educational television, and you could basically have anything up there. It wouldn't matter. It's not making you smarter, right? Because the television in and of itself, if you're engaged in a program, even though you might be downloading some information that is, you know, educational, mm-hmm. just the process that your brain is going through to have to watch the television is putting your brain in a more dumbed down state altogether, right?
Well, yeah, I've heard Fetzer say that, Jim Fetzer, of course, I don't listen much anymore, but yeah, you're in a hypnotic state. So the information is going into your subconscious. Your active cognitive functions are actually not working. It's just literally bypassing any exercise for the brain and just being fed into the base, which apparently is harder to get it out of the base. It's harder.
It is. That's exactly true, because there's two great books written on that subject. The Seven Arguments for the Elimination of Television by Gary Mander, and another one called The Plug-in Drug by Marie Wynn. And both of those books go over that point. Marie Wynn was coming at it from a perspective of what I was referring to about Sesame Street and children. And, it's the same thing when, if you're watching something on TV like that, like Benjamin Netanyahu holding up a cartoon bomb, and then telling you that you need to be scared of it, there's an active part being played right there, not only in the process of watching the TV or watching the image being given to you, but then there's the active participation of these people in dumbing you down, in making the information dumber. You see? So now you've got two things against you. You're watching the TV, and you're watching this fake news that comes out every day, and fake news stories, and, you know, reality TV shows that are fake. And this is a double whammy for your brain, because you've already got one point against you because you're watching it on television, and then now you're watching information that is purposely dumbed down to dumb you down.
Wow. That's heavy. I understand what you're saying, though. Television is base level education. And it's not meant for you to, it's not meant to help you learn. It's meant to help you receive simple messages all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think a while back you had, I remember you having something on one of your Fakeologist podcasts, and you were talking about Rod Serling.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
No, not really. But okay. He said the Twilight Zone, and I think
you were saying you're a sort of a Rod Serling fan.
Well, I did like a lot of Twilight Zones. Yeah, they made you think. Most of them were a bit of a disappointment, because for me, I was always looking for the really strange ones. But yeah, they made you think in a way, the Twilight Zone, the black and white ones.
Yeah, and so you hear interviews with Rod Serling, and he does, he he at least appears on the surface. I didn't know him personally, so I don't know, and I don't know what his political views were or anything like that. But at least on the surface, he appears as someone who had this idea, this kind of, I guess, utopian idea that television was going to actually be able to be a tool to make people think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that he, you know, that he was one of these writers who was going to give you stuff like The Twilight Zone. Like you just said, The Twilight Zone does make you think. It makes you ponder and kind of wonder about the world that you're living in. And so, like I said, I don't know too much about Rod Serling in his personal endeavors, but I thought that was an interesting interview that it, maybe there were people at the time who were writers and wrote scripts and things like that, and they really did have this idea, like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a great tool. We will actually be able to, you know, put out good information. But they weren't even aware that of the fact that television in its inception was devised to be a hypnotic tool.
Yeah, a propaganda device, really, I think, maybe.
Yeah, somehow absolutely.
By the military.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what it is now, no doubt about it. You could just say it's a propaganda tool mainly for corporations where they brainwash you into thinking you need a certain product by showing a certain lifestyle that you would, one might desire. But that maybe is where it's at now, but that doesn't mean other social messages can't be written into the script, as it were. And
exactly. Well,
and be called news, I suppose. That's the main one. News.
North, east, west, and south.
It's so good to see that the major networks are just losing every year their influence. So now the big question is, will anyone or any entity or any device really take over? Because I still think it's pretty fractured out there today, and there's a whole new generation. Let's see where they go.
Yep, and see what the plan is, because there's no doubt in my mind that they were anticipating something like this happening. So, see what
actually
the,
your generation, because I think you're in your 30s. From the people I know in their early 40s, late 30s, they're getting their news from the comedy shows, the John. What's his name? Was just quitting.
John Stewart?
Yeah. They're getting a lot of their news from there. If you call it news, because it comes
That makes a lot of sense. I have to say that people of my generation, especially males, they don't take life very seriously at all. And I even in my younger years, I didn't take life seriously at all. It's kind of something I think is kind of ingrained into our generation. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's seen too many reruns of Caddyshack.
Yeah.
I think I've
always taken it pretty seriously, and I think there are very low percentage of the population, like you and myself, that actually also bumped into this media fakery stuff by trying to figure out why things don't add up in a lot of ways, and here we are talking. And here the listeners are listening, hopefully. But we're small. Let's be frank. We're a very small segment of society that's not growing, probably. But we're still here.
Well, it appeared to be growing at one time, and I think what's happened is it's kind of... It's kind of over the fad phase, and the people who are going to stick around and keep looking into the information are the people who are the ones who are, like, really into it, you know?
Yeah. And that term I was looking for on the last call about reality being mixed in with the fantasy or fakery, I think it's called augmented reality. I believe that's the term that was being used on the KHAM radio show.
Augmented reality. Yep.
Right. And someone just put a post on fakeologist.com.
I was going to say, it's interesting that they call it augmented, because to augment something is augmented is usually applied when something is, improved.
Yeah, it's to add to.
Yeah.
I think it's to add to. And someone made a post at forums.fakeologist.com about diminished reality. I haven't read the post yet, but that's the opposite, I suppose. I don't know what he was getting at because I didn't read it yet, but...
Well, maybe he was...
Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe he was a musician, because in music, if a chord is augmented, then you move up the scale, and if a chord is diminished, you move down the scale, so...
Oh, okay.
That's what I was thinking of.
Well, I have to read the post, and anyone can read it at forums.fakeologist.com.
I'm going to have to run here, my friend.
No, good. That was good. We talked for an hour. It was interesting. If you want to talk tomorrow, we'll try and find some interesting talking points. You always email me different things so we can talk about whatever you want if you're available. And anyone who's listening can join in, too.
Can we do
the conference call?
Tomorrow I won't be available, but if we could do one Friday.
Sure. All right, that's fine. Try and make any this time available for anyone who wants to chat at about 4:30 Eastern time. All right, John, thanks. Thanks for coming by.
All right, man, thanks a lot. I'll talk to you Friday.
All right, great. Take care.
Bye.
Hi, this is Late Night with Kay, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.